Hi, I'm Ray Poynter, a co-founder of ResearchWise, and this is Talking AI. And I am delighted that today we've got Alok Jain with us, a co-founder and CEO of Reveal. Hi, Alok.
Hi, Ray. It's good to be here.
Great to have you. Maybe we could start off with just a little bit of your backstory, and tell us a little bit about Reveal, maybe.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I often tell people that I feel I'm one of the luckiest people. My whole career started because I watched Jurassic Park as a movie, and I was like, that's cool stuff. I want to do it. So my education was in economics, but when I watched the movie, that moved me towards a design career, and that eventually led into broader user experience and design, product strategy, things like that. So I ended up starting the first UX team at the World Bank. I've led the research and strategy at Centene, which is a Fortune 50 healthcare company. And then I've also been on the services side and the agency side of business. My journey with AI, I want to say, started probably about 8 years ago. With the healthcare company, we were looking at lots of very difficult problems in healthcare and how machine learning can solve those. And then currently, my focus is with Reveal, looking at how we can synthesize qualitative research. How can we truly understand it at a deeper level and synthesize qualitative research so that the researchers can focus more on their craft and lead the busy work for AI. So right now, I'm building Reveal. The URL is doreveal.com. And essentially, you can upload your interviews, recordings, focus groups, and it'll help you through a series of tools to be able to extract insights out of that.
Brilliant. Okay, so the theme we're going to talk about today is depth and quality when using AI to research and using it for research to synthesize findings via AI. So what is depth and quality to you?
Yeah, that's a really great question. If you look at what's happening with the broader tech today, Grok 4 was released a couple of days back, and Elon Musk and team, they claim that it's 4x better than Grok 3, which was released just a few months ago, right? So there are similar stories by OpenAI and others. The speed at which this technology is moving is 10xing. If you look at the research field specifically, I don't think we are 10xing every few months just yet. And my hypothesis is that because it's easy to apply AI to lots of different use cases. So right now, everybody is sort of going for breadth to say, can I do OAI-moderated interviews with it? Can I do synthesis with it? Things like that. But then the value really starts to come into the depth. One of the things that I find very fascinating is Sam Altman, who's a CEO of OpenAI. He talks about how AI is going to be the best programmer by the end of this year in the world.
Yeah.
So question becomes, what does it mean to be the best researcher in the world? And how can we use AI to help get there? It doesn't have to replace human beings, but how can we help everybody be able to perform at a much higher level to be the 10x researchers to be able to do that? So that's where I think the depth starts to come in, that how do we truly understand the research materials? Especially with AI, you can do things at scale and you can try out many different things, and those are awesome tools to be able to go deeper. So that's really where that thought comes from, that how do we go deeper into research?
So one of the questions that I see people discussing in this area is whether they should use platforms like Gemini, like ChatGPT, or should they use specialist tools like Reveal? What are the pros and cons of both of those in your eyes?
So the ChatGPT's Claude of the world, underneath that, the technology is the same, right? Most of the
Yeah.
software products, including Reveal, are using OpenAI or Anthropic and other such solutions. The difference really comes in is how you're able to use that tool. Part of it is about how do you provide the data to those tools. In case of ChatGPT, Claude, those kind of tools, you're limited because you only have a chat interface and it has a limited amount of what they call as context window, essentially how much can the tool keep in the memory and respond to you. So you run into those kind of challenges. So I think those tools are great for you to be able to supply some materials like that, ask questions, do some probing with that. But as you get deeper into the workflow, as you're trying to bring 12 interviews, 20 interviews together, and you're trying to understand what are the patterns between them and query that data, that's where the specialized tools start to come in. The second part of it, I think, is really around prompt engineering itself, that with the first set of tools with chatbots and all, you have to think about the holistic prompt. You have to tell, okay, you think like a market researcher and do these things, etc. With the tools like Reveal and others, those kind of core prompt best practices are already built in. So you're able to focus on what's in your mind. So it gets a lot more closer to your own curious mind to say, let me just ask this question. I don't need to worry about how do I phrase it. I can ask that question, get the response. Oh, that's interesting. Let me probe further into it. So you're able to follow your thought a lot more easily, and that means you're able to again go deeper into the analysis.
I think that's good, but I also often see a gap between sometimes there may be more power in the LLM, but it's uncontrolled. And so the user has to be much more knowledgeable about the LLM, whereas, of
Yes.
course, their strength is knowledge about research. And if they are using a tool, then there are guardrails. Some people get nervous about the word guardrails. I'm a big fan of guardrails. And I think that can be quite a big difference. People can be productive more quickly, I think, with specific tools.
I think that's a really great point because it's truly valuable to understand how this technology works in the background. And as we build that understanding, some of these more specialized tools allow you to ramp up.
So at the moment, are we talking about mostly text-based, or is it able to use different modes like images, like sound?
Reveal right now is particularly focused on the text base. We are looking into being multimodal and being able to review the way expressions are being made in the audio files and things like that. Currently, it is text based.
Yeah, I think that is probably the norm. There's a lot of systems will upload video and sound, but what they typically do is convert it into text. And that is where a lot of the strength is at the moment. But I think we will see some quite interesting changes in that area. I guess one of the concerns that people talk about a lot is hallucinations. My personal feel is that in 2025, they're much less of a problem than they were in 2023, but I'd be keen to hear what your thoughts are.
Definitely. I mean, with Reveal, that was one of the first things we wanted to make sure that we, because if it is hallucinating, then the tool doesn't really deliver value. So we've been pretty successful, and I'm sure other products have been successful also. So I do agree that it's a very solvable problem. I do hear examples like recently in one of the Google groups of MRX Pros. If somebody's not a part of it, I would definitely encourage people to join. It's a brilliant group. There was a conversation about some quotes being hallucinated by AI. So I think there are still examples like that. However, when we look at the technology itself, it absolutely, you can make it work. In case of Reveal, we also have trained. So everything is tied to evidence. So that's the first sort of piece that if it comes back with something, you can look at where exactly in the transcript it's coming from. So that forces accuracy. And then we have also added a layer of training where AI in general tends to be helpful. It's very difficult for AI to say, no, I don't know that. So we've added a layer for it to be trained on that to say, if you don't have knowledge about this, don't try to cook up something, say you don't know. And we've
Yeah.
been pretty successful on that.
Yeah, that is such an important step. Okay, I'm going to take a sharp pivot now, picking up on something you said a moment ago about the MRX Pro Group. I'm always asked this question: how do you find out what is going on in the AI world? What are the your favorite go-to places for learning?
I actually find a very wide range of resources. It's not just one, because there's so much happening in the industry. And I also look at things beyond just what's happening directly in qualitative research related AI. So MRX Pros is absolutely a great group. There are some really good conversations that happen there. Those conversations are not just about AI, but they are also about exactly how the researchers, what are the researchers really trying to do? And I find that super, super valuable in that regard. One of the things that I learned from the founder of MRX Pros Group, Janet Standen, and I think you've also mentioned Ray in your past conversations about using grounded theory and those kind of frameworks to analyze these things, right? So you start to learn more about some of these deeper elements that some of the more experienced people like yourself are using. And then I start to explore how do I apply it into Reveal. So that's definitely a form. And then beyond that, I think even simple LinkedIn feed, Twitter feeds, there are lots of little nuggets that come out that I can then follow and thread into. So areas like that is where I get a lot of information.
Brilliant. So while we're talking about what you do, so you use Reveal on a regular basis. What else? What other platforms do you use regularly?
Yes, Reveal. We definitely use it for ourselves. We analyze our sales calls. We analyze customer feedback. Absolutely. The most foundational tool we end up using is ChatGPT. That is such a wide range, and including Sora for some of the image generation. I use it to test out ideas, to brainstorm ideas with me, and things like that. Claude, similarly to ChatGPT, is also something that I use. It's not available as freely as Claude as ChatGPT is, so it is a paid subscription, so I use it a little bit less. And then I started playing with Gemini and Grok a lot more in the recent weeks, I would say. Outside of that, there is a custom flow that we create a lot in Google Sheets. There is a small blog article that we have on the website on how to use AI with Google Sheets. There's a lot of experimentation that we do within that space where we are connecting directly to OpenAI's API and then using Google Sheets as a mechanism to try things out. And then there are other tools like Figma has a tool, has AI built into it. So we do some mind maps with using that. V0 to create some initial artifacts, prototypes, things like that.
Brilliant, brilliant. So we're using these AI things. Where has AI changed what you do?
Yes. So the most fundamental piece I think AI has helped me with is really around brainstorming and developing ideas. So earlier, when I would think of ideas, they're percolating in my head, and it takes time for me to express that and get it out and maybe talk to other people about that. But what I've learned over a period of time using AI is that I'm actually able to express those ideas much more quickly to a ChatGPT kind of an interface and see what it thinks and what alternatives are there or what am I missing and help me develop that. So that's been a big area where if I have an article, idea about an article or a product feature or generally a concept in the industry, I actually heavily use AI to brainstorm that with me. Beyond that, a lot of learning. It's very easy for me to go in and ask any kind of question, whether it's about DIY fixes at home or it is about product strategy. I actively use those tools. So micro-learning especially, I think, has been really valuable too with these tools.
Fantastic. And we're nearly out of time, but how would you suggest that somebody new, and actually, this is most people, somebody new to AI to get started, what should their first few things be?
That's a great question. First of all, I think there is a lot of debate that goes on in the industry about where to use AI, how to use AI, etc. I would ignore that. I would just jump in and say, whatever is the first thing that you're curious about, it could be personal or it could be work-related, doesn't matter. Just start using the technology. And tools like ChatGPT are free. You can just drop in and try things out. It's really important to get a feel for how technology is working, what it's capable of. It's going to make mistakes. It's going to present something that are hallucinations. That's totally fine. You will, over a period of time, learn to recognize those things and overcome those things. But starting to engage is really the most important piece of it. Of course, data privacy is an important part of it. So just make sure don't put anything that you're not sure of, kind of a thing. The second thing that I am very bullish on that I feel is going to be a really important part of our tool set as all people, not just in qualitative research, is this idea of vibe coding. Vibe coding is where you can just type things in a natural language and it'll program for you. It'll create a Python program or another language program for you. And I find that a really powerful skill because you can now make computers do things in a way that you want it exactly. So you could say, okay, go and look at exactly this piece of text and extract sentiments out of it. You could do that. Or you could say, create a screener questionnaire for me and actually program it for me and things like that. So I think it's a really powerful skill. Even if you don't know any programming, I would definitely encourage you to start with something small, ask it to build something for you, and then see how it goes from there.
Great. Two super ideas there, Alok. Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us today on Talking AI.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.